Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your show host, Randy Fine. To quote today's special guest, Carol Novello, who is the author of Mutual Rescue, How Adopting a Homeless Animal Can Save You Too, rescue animals can give people the strength to face inconceivable pain. The structure and solace cats and dogs bring to addicts' lives help ease the grip of their disease and offers them hope that a fresh start is possible. Those are two different quotes that she said, but we're going to talk about all these different things and how pets actually help people and heal people. But Carol Novello is the founder of Mutual Rescue, a national initiative that highlights the connection between people and pets in order to inspire and support life-saving efforts in communities across the nation and world. Mutual Rescue's first short film, Eric and Petey, went viral around the globe and has been viewed more than 100 million times. Mutual Rescue illustrates how rescuing animals impacts the lives of humans, often in quite profound ways. And the lives of both people and pets are enriched when homeless animals are adopted and local shelter groups are supported through donations and volunteering in their communities. I want to introduce you to Carol Novello. She is the expert and has done tremendous research on this. And if you love pets, you're going to love this show. Good morning, Carol. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Randy. It's a delight to be here.
It's a delight to have you. So let's just start with you telling us how this all came to be, how this became so important to you.
Well, I started out about 10 years ago. I made a transition. I used to be a senior executive in the high-tech world, and I actually transitioned into a position running a local shelter in Silicon Valley called Humane Society Silicon Valley. And what was very interesting is people's reaction when I made that shift, because people would sometimes say to me, "Why are you helping animals when you could be helping people?" And I thought that was very curious because I knew how much animals had meant in my life. And I was seeing every day as people were adopting animals from our shelter of the impact that those animals were having on humans. And so I took a step back and said, wow, you know, there's something going on here. I wanted to learn more. And what I found out is of the $410 billion that Americans give to charity every year, only 3% goes to animals and the environment combined. And what I realized is there seems to be this sense that animal welfare is somehow a second-class cause. And I really wanted to change the conversation from people or animals to people and animals. And that ultimately led to creating the Mutual Rescue Initiative, which is now a national initiative where we're sharing stories through short films, through the book, through social media that highlight the very profound ways that adopting a homeless animal can change human lives.
That's just wonderful. You know, I know there are people who are very, very dedicated to this, but I understand that it must be a small percentage. You talk about the phenomenon, the rescue effect. What exactly is that?
Well, that's really looking at the fact that when people adopt an animal, in many cases, they will go on to do even more good out in the world. And one of my favorite stories is a short film that we made. It's called Josh and Scout. And if you go to mutualrescue.org, you can see that short film. You can also read about Josh and Scout's story in the Mutual Rescue book. But what ends up transpiring is after Josh ends up adopting a homeless kitten, he not only goes on to heal his own post-traumatic stress disorder and finally establish a relationship and get married, but he actually decides that he wants to help other veterans like himself. And so he went back and he got a graduate degree, and he's now helping other veterans. And he actually attributes that back to Scout and the fact that Scout gave him purpose and made him feel loved. And, you know, as he says in the film and in the book, he says, you know, I realized I wasn't just this sack of damaged goods. And it was the fact that this other sentient being saw value in him, and he was able to internalize and realize just how much value he had to offer the world and has gone on to do good and help others.
That's a great story. In the beginning of the book, you you reference, I think it's two students from Stoneman Douglas High School, the one where there was the mass shooting. And, you know, that always sparks something in me because it's in my neck of the woods. And my husband and I have had a chance to interact with these students. So it is, it's particularly sensitive to me, but can you talk about how this story is about how these students were impacted by animals?
Yes, these were two students. It was Grace and Jonathan that I talk about in the book, and of course, deeply traumatized by that experience and just feeling, you know, very unsafe and not themselves and really disconnected from life. And they credit rescue dogs with making a huge difference in their ability to re-ground themselves in life and being able to get through the school day, especially when they initially started going back to school. So Grace's story actually involves a local humane society there, the Humane Society of Broward County. And they have a wonderful program called Canines for Community Resilience that was started by one of their managers there. And she brought her dog, Karma, who was a rescue dog, and brought Karma to the school when school started up again. And Grace didn't really know how she was going to get through the day going back to school. She was really nervous and upset and didn't want to go. And she got there, and she connected with Karma, and Karma just helped her feel safe and loved. And what was so wonderful about Humane Society of Broward County's program is the fact that they were there throughout the remainder of the school year. So, you know, a lot of times groups will fly in with comfort dogs, which is wonderful, but, you know, then they're gone in a couple of weeks. And the Humane Society of Broward County was actually able to be there with their crew of rescue dogs and volunteers throughout the remainder of the school year, and it really made a huge difference for Grace. And Jonathan actually, he really was withdrawn after the experience and just decided after seeing the dogs at school that, you know what, I think I really need a dog. And he went and adopted a dog from 1,000 abandoned dogs of the Everglades from that rescue group. And they generously waived the fee, knowing the circumstances. And Jonathan's dad really credits the dog with, his name's Ajax. Ajax really helped him reconnect. It became a place all of his friends would come over after school, and they would just hang with the dog, and it helped them, you know, feel comfortable with one another and helped them open up and process their grief and helped them to move on.
Oh, that is so heartwarming. Wow. So what is it about this bond that we develop with these animals that is so healing? Why does this happen?
Well, it's interesting, especially in the cases with the Parkland students that I just talked about. There's some basic psychological needs that we have. There's something called a safe haven and a secure anchor. And those are psychological needs that we have. And those needs can be met by other people, and they can also be met through pets. So a safe haven is a place that we feel comfort. And it is literally what it is. It's a place where we feel safe, and we can generate that internal experience of feeling comfort and security. And a secure anchor is something that helps us feel more confident. It's kind of like a place that we kind of, you know, dig into and ground ourselves, that gives us the confidence to be able to go out in the world and be more courageous in terms of how we're showing up. So there's a psychological element that is in humans that we need that. And when that is disturbed by something as traumatic as what happened at Parkland, it is really upsetting psychologically, and we need to kind of reestablish our equilibrium to get a secure place and a safe haven back into our framework. And that's one of the things that pets can help us with.
That's really interesting. How do I know that you talk about domestic abuse survivors and how cats and dogs have helped them. Do you have any stories to share about that?
I do, yeah. There's an amazing story in the book, a woman by the name of Amanda, and she was in an abusive relationship, and she actually was having a hard time recognizing that indeed it was an abusive relationship. But she had, before actually getting into this relationship, she had adopted a stray dog. His name was Nigel. And Nigel was scared of everything. He was scared of bikes and shadows and trash cans and you name it. But she fell in love with this stray and just became her constant companion. And then she got into this relationship. And it, you know, initially was a great relationship. And then she started to see, you know, cracks forming. And he started to become verbally abusive to her and separate her from her friends. And Nigel was there through all this. And one particular evening, they got into a fight, and she doesn't even remember kind of what it was about. And her boyfriend started throwing things and yelling at her, and she was getting really scared. And Nigel, you know, her scaredy cat dog, basically walked over, stood over her, and glared at her boyfriend with this look like, "Don't you dare touch her." And she, in that moment, recognized, she's like, "Oh, my gosh, you know, for my dog to do this, I must really be in an unsafe situation." And that moment is what caused her to, she packed up all her stuff. She got a laundry basket of clean clothes, a leash for Nigel, and they headed out the door, and she never went back. And she credits Nigel for several things. One is demonstrating courage. And there's a great quote by Brené Brown. She talks about when we see courage, it actually inspires other people to be more courageous. And that's essentially what Nigel role modeled for Amanda and gave her the courage to leave. And on top of that, it gave her the courage to stay away because she did have Nigel really as a safe haven that helped her from going back into the relationship. And what's really, you know, wonderful is she's since gone on, and she's now met a wonderful man who treats her very well. They've gotten married. They have a wonderful relationship together. And unfortunately, Nigel actually passed recently, but he was welcomed into their home and loved as a member of the family. And, you know, it's amazing. That dog really changed the trajectory of her life, which is amazing.
That is amazing. So beautiful. Oh, what a sweet story. I like, you know, I found it really interesting in your book how you talk about how dogs and cats were actually domesticated. So can you talk about that a bit? Because I thought, you know, I just think my listeners would be interested to hear that.
Well, it's very interesting. Dogs were domesticated much, much earlier than cats. And it's funny, but one of the things that actually drew dogs to humans is the fact that, you know, we're looking for food sources and people. This is a little kind of disgusting, but dogs were attracted to human poop because it was essentially an easily digestible form of nourishment. And so as dogs started, you know, coming around closer to human beings, it provided the opportunity for dogs and humans to interact, and the ones that, you know, felt more comfortable getting closer are the ones that started developing bonds with animals, and then humans started to recognize the value of having the dogs around in terms of, you know, early warning that other people were coming or helping them with hunting and that kind of thing. So it really truly became a mutually beneficial relationship early on. And with cats were domesticated much later, and so there's not nearly as much of archaeological information around that. But, you know, a lot of times they're attracted to human, you know, civilizations because of the opportunity to find mice that were attracted to grain and that kind of thing. So we've had this interesting past with these animals because we found ways that we can benefit one another and help each other succeed and thrive, and that's evolved to where we are today in the context of these animals being part of our homes and part of our lives in very integrated ways.
And there's so many different breeds of dogs, and so, I mean, if they started from wolves, how did they get to be all these different breeds of, you know, canines?
So as we've spent time with them, what happens is, you know, the things that humans are attracted to, then they're, you know, further cultivating. So the cute floppy-eared ones are the ones that are getting, you know, closer to the humans, and those are the ones that are reproducing. And so it's kind of been an inadvertent genetic selection process for how these animals evolved over time based on how they, the ones that had certain qualities that were more conducive to interacting with humans.
So do you think that they have evolved into compassionate entities, or that as wolves they were compassionate?
I think that they all had different genetic traits, and those that were more inclined to be tamer are the ones that got closer to humans, and that strain evolved into what is now the domestic dog. So, I mean, wild wolves are wild wolves, but so that strain still lives on. But as you have different kind of, you know, mutations, the animals have you know, turned into different species over time.
You say that they use these sometimes in funeral homes. I thought that was pretty interesting. Is this getting to be more and more common?
Well, I think, you know, what we're seeing is what I talk about in the book Mutual Rescue, How Adopting a Homeless Animal Can Save You Too. The book's actually divided into four sections: heart, body, mind, and connection. And within each of those sections, I talk about various aspects of human elements of living. And in the heart section, you know, the first chapter talks about courage, which is when I was talking about the Parkland students and Amanda's story and about how she got out of a domestic abuse situation. And then there's also a chapter on grief and talking about that. And there's a man in Roseville, California, and he runs a funeral home. And he had a family that came in, and they were making arrangements for their parents who had passed. And they had this little little poodle named Lady. And Lady came in and was just so sweet and wanting attention. And Doug, the funeral home director, said, "Oh my gosh, you know, what are you going to do with this dog?" And they said, "Oh well, you know, we don't know what we're going to do, and we might have to put her down because we don't know what we're going to do with her." And he said, "Well, please, please don't do that. And you know, please contact me if you can't find a home for her." And so they reached back out again in a couple of days. And so he decided to adopt Lady, and she has turned into this amazing source of comfort that for people that are grieving in the funeral home. And, you know, there's something about an animal where you don't need to speak. You don't have to explain your feelings. You can just, you know, you can just be with that animal and feel their presence and their comfort. And that is an incredibly profound experience for many people. And Doug will talk about the fact that, you know, he's just seen, you know, like these big burly, you know, auto mechanic, you know, guy came in and just was very stoic, and Lady, you know, climbed up into his lap and just, you know, it just brought him to tears because it helped him connect with what the grief he needed to process inside. And so I think more and more we're looking at the role that animals can play in our lives in various scenarios. And I think that, you know, what we're going to see more and more of in society is the integration of human and animal services, because they really do go hand in hand. And one of the things that's very interesting in animal welfare is if you look at, you know, what's driving rescue animals or, you know, what's driving homeless animals into shelters where they even need to be rescued in the first place. And a lot of times it's attached to human poverty. So we found with our shelter in Silicon Valley that the very high percentage of homeless animals are coming into shelters from low-income areas where people don't have access to the services that they need to be able to keep animals in their homes. And so as we start thinking about the welfare of animals and the welfare of humans, those things go together, and we're going to need to, you know, need to address them. And in the context of a situation, you know, like Amanda's, what you're starting to see now, there are, you know, domestic abuse shelters that are actually recognizing the fact that they need to consider whether or not people that need the services have pets, because pets can affect the situation in a couple of different ways. In some cases, like in Amanda's case, it gives people the inspiration to actually get out of an abusive relationship. But sometimes people are fearful to leave because they don't want to leave their pet behind, and the shelter, the domestic violence shelter that they want to go to, does not accept pets. And so then people are staying in situations that are not safe or healthy for them. But more and more human services are starting to recognize that. There's just a new shelter in Ohio that just opened up that recognizes that need. And so I think that's very promising and beneficial for both people and animals, and I'm excited to see how that's going to unfold across the country in the coming years.
Yeah, that's something I never thought about, but you're absolutely right. It would keep, just like children can keep people in a marriage or a bad relationship, but I could see where the pet would, because, you know, if you can't go anywhere with that pet and you don't want to leave it, and, you know, that is a dilemma. Do you think it will ever get to a point where they have veterinary services for people who can't afford them? Because that is really, you know, for me, that was one of the things that when I had pets, it got so expensive. When they get sick, it's really costly.
Yes, there's actually an initiative out of the University of Tennessee. A guy by the name of Michael Blackwell is leading it, and it's coming out of the Graduate School of Social Work there, that's looking at what's necessary to create access for low-income people to veterinary services, because that is absolutely affecting, you know, it's affecting those people's lives in terms of, you know, it's emotionally traumatic to have to surrender or give up an animal that you deeply love, but you can't afford their care. And then that's an animal that ends up having to go into the sheltering system, and it costs money to rehome and take care of that animal and make sure that it ends up in a safe place. And so that's going to be, I think you're going to see a lot of that coming out in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. And I think, you know, what's encouraging is we're making a lot of progress in animal welfare. I mean, there are still, you know, there's still 6.5 million animals that are going into shelters across the United States. And of those, 1.5 million are being euthanized. So we still have tons of work to do. And I don't want to minimize just how much work we have to do there. However, we've made huge, huge strides. I mean, those numbers used to be, in the 10 million range, and, you know, much significantly higher number of animals that are being euthanized. So as we are making strides through spay and neuter programs and encouraging people to adopt, more and more it's going to be about how do we make sure that we're keeping animals and people together, that we're keeping families together, and how do we address that through the challenges of low-income families and being able to keep those pets in homes.
That's really good news for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, I know there's a great need for it now, and it's not as prevalent as it needs to be, but it's exciting that, you have somebody like Michael Blackwell and the University of Tennessee that are looking at this work and recognizing the role that it plays in social services for humans.
As an aside, why do you think so many people are taking their dogs everywhere they go instead of letting their dogs stay home and sleep? I mean, you see them in grocery stores. You see them everywhere, on planes, pushing strollers. Why do you think people – do you have an opinion on that?
I do. I mean, I think the first thing is that dogs are pack animals, and so they want to be with their people. They don't want to be they'd much rather be with you than be home alone and sleeping. So I think that's the first thing from the animal's perspective. And then the second thing, I think, is they're a companion. I mean, when you just kind of think about being a human, and like, I know I have a lot more fun if I'm going to the grocery store with someone else than if I'm just going by myself. And so it's that companionship aspect that I think is what's driving people to want to have their animals, with them and to enjoy their company. They are, they're our friends and they're our family, and that's, I think, why we want to have them with us when that's possible.
And that's really, that's really created the market for boutique dogs, which is not necessarily the best thing. A lot of people have gotten those boutique dogs so that they can carry them in the purses and stuff like that. And that
there are plenty of small dogs in shelters. There's I always encourage people to adopt, and if you go to mutualrescue.org, we've got a search engine there where you can look for adoptable animals that are available in your area. And unfortunately there's a whole kind of underworld associated with what are called designer dogs that is not in the best interest of the animals. So really do encourage people to take that into consideration. And, sometimes people are, going to go to a breeder, and, we just always want to remind people to look for responsible breeders that are making sure that the animals are well cared for. But we hope first and foremost that people will go to their local shelter or rescue group and adopt an animal.
Is there ever a situation where someone adopts an animal and it just doesn't work out?
Yeah, sometimes that does happen, and it's interesting. I mean, you have to think about the fact that 50% of marriages end in divorce. So sometimes it doesn't work out when you adopt an animal, and we always hope that people are going to make a commitment that lasts. But if it's not the right fit, then sometimes animals do come back to the shelter. And, at Humane Society of Silicon Valley, we have a commitment. We, you know, we do our best to screen and make the best matches. But sometimes you find out that, you know, you thought a dog would get along with a cat, and it turns out the dog, you know, doesn't get along with cats, so now the cat's unsafe. So, you know, you end up having to we will always take an animal back to our shelter that someone has adopted from us to make sure that it is safe and that it finds a new home where it is a good fit. So, you know, there can be a lot of judgment, I think, in animal welfare, and you know, people get really upset when they hear about people surrendering an animal. And while we certainly, you know, we always look and see if there's anything we can do to help keep a family together, but sometimes, you know, somebody might get married and their new spouse has allergies, or, you know, there's all kinds of situations like that. And the key thing is to make sure that the animal is rehomed and cared for and not abandoned. And so we work very closely with people that come to us with those situations to see what we can do to potentially keep the family together. And then if not, to make sure that the animal is safely rehomed.
Okay. What do you do, what do people do about animals that have been severely traumatized and they, you know, they have issues, emotional issues as a result of it? Do you support the people in how to deal with that problem, or basically once they adopt the baby, that, you know, they have to work it out? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, we handle that specifically at our shelter at Humane Society Silicon Valley. We handle that on a case-by-case basis. Fortunately, I would say the number of animals that have been hugely traumatized, I mean, I think there's this perception that animals that are showing up in the shelter are, quote, damaged. And there are a lot of amazing animals in the shelter. And I would say most just need kind of basic training. But for those that have, you know, experienced more challenging situations, we will, you know, in order to make sure that animal can, you know, be in a home as long as there's no issues around, you know, safety for other humans or other animals, we'll sometimes support that with ongoing behavioral support to make sure that that transition works well and that the animal can actually be successful in that home for the long term.
That's really good to know. You know, I think about this, I picture myself, you know, working, doing what you do, and my heart would bleed on a daily basis for, you know, watching all these abandoned animals. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, I'm really proud of the work at Humane Society Silicon Valley. We're actually the first shelter in the country to meet the guidelines put forth by the Association of Shelter Veterinarians. So we are very focused on making sure that the animals in our care are getting everything that they need in order to thrive and ultimately find their way into loving homes. So, you know, setting that standard and that bar in the industry is something that we're really proud of, and I think that that's kind of what I go to on a daily basis, is knowing what we're doing for these animals and the fact that, you know, their stay with us is a temporary one because they're going to end up going into loving homes and transforming human lives. So, you know, if you stay too focused on, oh my gosh, you know, everything that they've gone through, I'm not looking at their past, I'm looking at their future. And their future is really quite bright, as well as what it means for the human lives that they're going to touch when they go into their home. And that's one of the things about the Mutual Rescue films and about the book that I think is very special and unique, which is for those of us that work in animal welfare, a lot of times we just see that one moment in time. We just see the dog that came in traumatized and go, oh my God, that poor dog, and then we're left with that image, and we don't know what happened to that animal in the context of, yes, we know it found a home, but we don't know who it went to and what their lives look like and all that. And so what we've done with the Mutual Rescue book is we've pieced together those stories. So to be able to highlight, here's not only the happy ending that happened for this animal, but then here's the happy ending for the human that adopted the animal. So you can read about that in the book. You can see the short films. One of the short films that you can see on the mutualrescue.org website, it's a short film called Mike and Abby. And Abby was brought to our shelter in Silicon Valley, and she was abandoned on a busy highway. Basically, somebody threw her out a window into like a five-lane highway. And so she was extraordinarily traumatized. A Good Samaritan stopped, spent over an hour trying to coax her into the car, and brought her to us. And she essentially, you know, was in our shelter, and she was completely shut down. She was withdrawn. She was scared of everything. And so if that's the last thing that you ever knew about Abby, you know, you think, oh, my God, poor Abby. And, you know, you're sitting there with your pain and your upset about the trauma that she experienced. But the ending, the part of the story that we're able to tell because we've tracked it, is that Abby was adopted by a guy named Mike. And Mike had gone through his own trauma. He'd lost his job. He'd lost his ability to pay the mortgage. And then his fiance left him. So he was shut down and, you know, kind of going through his own set of trauma. And one day he was driving around and he just decided to stop by the shelter. And he saw Abby and how shut down she was and was like, this is my dog. And he adopted Abby, and, you know, he was like, I'm not sure what I'm doing here, you know. And our counselors just advised him, take her with you everywhere you go and help her see the world, help her see the world through your eyes. And so they did. And for the first year, you know, he spent a lot of time working with her. She was scared of everything and very uncertain and tentative. But he kept working with her and building up trust. And one day they went to the beach, and they were at the beach together. And because she always went where he went, he was out swimming in the ocean, and she went with him. And he just happened to ask a guy who was surfing, he's like, hey, do you mind if my dog rests on your surfboard for a second? and he's like, yeah, sure. So she gets up on the surfboard, and instead of, like, crouching down and resting, she stands straight up like she's ready to go. And so Mike's like, all right. And then this wave came up, so he gently kind of pushes her into the wave. And she rode the wave all the way into shore, jumped off the surfboard, her tail's wagging like, that was really fun, let's do it again. And so that's how he started surfing with her. And then they started entering, there's these dog surfing contests. They start doing these dog surfing contests together. She starts winning them. And she actually now holds the Guinness Book of World Record for the longest wave surfed by a dog.
Oh, my God.
I mean, talk about – and, of course, like, Mike's life is, like, totally transformed. And I was like, you know what, fiance? I've got this rockin' dog I go surfing with all the time. And, I mean, like, what an amazing story. But, again, for those of us that work in animal welfare, we don't necessarily get to see all those pieces. And you know, and even just for somebody that just loves animals, you know, you see – you know, the sad story about the animal and all that, and you get all depressed, and it's like, let's see the potential in these animals. Let's see the potential for what their lives can be, not only for themselves, but for the humans that welcome them into their lives. And that's what inspires me and helps me get up every day and do what I do, because I know the potential and the possibility that is there for their future and for their future adopters.
Oh, what a great answer. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. I like to look on the positive side of things, and you know, and I just that's a much better outlook than the one I have. And I
well, you do. I mean, you have to look for it because it you know, otherwise you're so focused on what you're seeing in front of you, and the possibilities of what can be are really amazing, and we're incredibly, you know, blessed at Humane Society Silicon Valley. We have fabulous donors who make our work possible, so that we really, you know, we're doing rescue work all throughout California now, and you know, the fact that we can help these animals and help other shelters that don't have as many resources as we do to get these animals into safe places and, you know, have them have a great future and the things that, again, you know, their humans are going to experience. I don't think everyone's going to end up with a dog that holds a Guinness Book of World Records. But the contrast, I mean, when I just think about Abby's story and where she started from and how scared she must have been on that highway, for me, that's not only inspirational in terms of, you know, the animal, but it just talks about the possibility for each and every one of us that, you know, our present does not have to be our future, and that we can create something new and wonderful for ourselves. And, you know, I'm inspired by Abby's story for myself, not just for her and other animals.
Yes, I like that. That's a great idea, great philosophy. It is. There is, you know, and I always say there's always room for movement in life. Things can always change. Nothing is ever set in stone. Possibilities are endless. So I like that. Yeah,
well, and I think, too, that shelter animals are so resilient. And that's the other thing that is so amazing, is that so many of them, you know, do go through trauma, and yet they emerge in, you know, amazing ways, and they show us that resilience is possible.
Awesome. Thank you for all this wonderful information. So you said your website is Mutual Rescue. Why don't you tell us again what your...
Yes, mutualrescue.org. And
okay.
If you go there, you can see our short films that we've released to date. You can sign up for our newsletter so you can stay in touch with us to find out about future films and future stories and learn more about our work. You can find a search engine there that will make it easy for you to find adoptable animals in your community, as well as local shelters and rescue groups in your community where you can go to adopt an animal or volunteer or donate. There's also the Mutual Rescue book. It's called Mutual Rescue, How Adopting a Homeless Animal Can Save You Too, and that's available wherever books are sold, your favorite online retailer or physical bookstore. So we really encourage people to learn more about the initiative and get involved.
It's a beautiful book. I have it in front of me, and you just really cover so many different aspects of life and how these animals can change lives, and there's some great stories in here. So thank you for that book. Thank you for the work you do. It's so, so important, and it sort of relieves my mind to know that this is going on. I feel better.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad to hear that, and really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Yes, thank you. Well, have a wonderful day, and give kisses to those animals for me, okay? Give them
all right, thanks so much, Randy.
Kisses. All right, take care. Have a great day. So we are out of time, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com, Randy, RANDIFINE.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.